M comes from Petersburg Flower Farm, with bouquets and subscriptions coming soon. Open 10 to 5, Friday through Monday at 6 Rory's Road. Close Tuesday through Thursday. More information at 907-518-4363 or Petersburg Flower Farm on Facebook.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a big homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Okay, afternoon, Petersburg. Here we are with In the Garden, and I'm here with Deb Hurley, my co-host. And today we have the guests of Sharon and Dick Sprigg from Satsby Island. And I almost kind of, this year, it's almost a little cruel to be playing tomatoes in the garden, because the gardens I've seen, I haven't seen too many ripe tomatoes yet, but... I guess we're still all hoping that things ripen up and we do get some tomatoes, at least some cherry tomatoes. But really want to thank Sharon and Dick for coming out and braving the narrows and getting over to Petersburg. They lived on Satsby Island, and they've been gardening over there for like 50 years, which is really remarkable, and no less remarkable than their garden. We were over there, and... I told Dick that, you know, he didn't have to mow the lawn just because we were coming, but everything looked just perfect, and they've got a large lawn with that's overlooks of the Narrows, and they've got covered greenhouses and chicken coops and all sorts of really nice things and trees over there. So I'll just go ahead and start with Sharon and ask her... you've been gardening for so long. How have things changed over the years from when you guys started gardening? Did you have a greenhouse when you started?
There was nothing there when we started.
Oh, wow.
Except burn piles and tin cans and broken glass. And that was just the way it was. Floribel had stuff.
Oh.
And then when they left, why, Chuck was there, and Chuck Waldron didn't have anything but just burn piles.
So Floribel and George Rice had that house before you did.
They put that house up. They, their boys were slave labor.
Uh-huh.
I know that they will appreciate hearing that.
So George told me, George Jr., or that, told me George. A story that one really hard cold winter that all the water pipes in Petersburg froze, and nobody could get down to the docks, and they had to haul water from the Petersburg Creek, because with the tide there, they could get up the creek. And
I wouldn't be surprised, because the little shed that the honeysuckle grows on was their water. They had a one-inch pipe across the flats, and when that froze, they had the water that was stored in that little shed. It was insulated, and it had plastic lining in it. And when that was gone, then Kathleen didn't have shower water or hair washing water.
Wow.
That was it.
Well, we took over from Tom Hubbard, and even though he wasn't there decades, he had a decade's worth of accumulated treasures over there. And we just spent the first year hauling, you know, boatloads of batteries and mounds of tin cans. And it's like... You don't have to go too deep in our woods, and there's still mounds back there.
That's what backhoes are for.
Yeah. Oh. What goes to Kuprinoff stays on Kuprinoff.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so then you started off getting the land ready and making beds, and then is that what you started with?
No, every time he would move something, like you're going to throw something away, and you move it, there's a piece of dirt that doesn't have anything on it, I'd run out and plant flowers in it. And that's how it all started.
Oh, okay.
It was a start from here and a start from there and from Ethel and from in town. And that's where it all came from.
Well, while you were over there, you had numerous stories of, oh, this plant came from so-and-so and this plant came from Franshaw, Saginaw. You've traveled around Southeast and gathered from old homesteads and and from old homesteaders.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so we give starts to everyone else. We always tell them they have to clean the roots out because they'll get some very unwanted things if they don't.
Right. You get some.
You never know what's in there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, go ahead. That's kind of a recurring theme that we hear from people that have successful gardens, and especially with perennials. And that is the best thing is to get them from somebody else because that plant's already gone through the natural selection of it does live. And it's probably acclimatized a little bit over the years to surviving here in Southeast. And
yep.
I was really impressed with your raspberries. I was impressed that you have early raspberries, mid-season raspberries, late raspberries, so that you can have raspberries all the time. That was really good.
It's been really nice to have them in the greenhouse for early.
Uh-huh.
When we come in April, they're already blooming, and they're getting ready to set berries then. So we have early raspberries, and then when they're just about gone, then the outside ones are starting to come on.
Right.
And then the one kind in the greenhouse, it does a double duty. It does it in the spring, and then it re-blooms in right now, and it will have berries into October.
Wow.
Inside.
And what do you do with all your berries?
People come and pick them by the bucketful and uh-huh. take them.
Oh, okay.
I have people come over, and they just come and pick what they want, and I don't keep anything they pick. They have to pick their own, they take their own.
Uh-huh. Well, I ate everything I picked.
They're not very sweet. We need some good sunshine, please.
Yeah, well, for lots of different reasons.
But the sugar bowl works fine.
Mm-hmm.
It takes care of it, and whipped cream on top is just fine with me.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Well, one of the questions we had in a past show was overwintering fuchsias, and you had, I don't know, 5 or 6 baskets of just huge overflowing fuchsias, and you said you overwinter those.
Always.
And how do you do that?
I just take them down when it's just about time to freeze, and I strip the leaves off. I make them quit blooming.
Oh, okay.
They usually get the very best just before you take them in. Isn't that the way it goes?
That's the way it goes.
And so I strip the leaves, everything, so it's just bare stems. And I don't usually cut them very far back. I maybe leave 6-8 inches. And then I carry them down underneath the house in the root cellar. And they're in the pitch dark. And they don't have anything. I water them before I put them down there, and then that's it for the winter. And then in January, February, either one of the kids will come over and set them in the greenhouse and pour water on them, or they'll just pour water on them in the root cellar and just let them sit there. And it wakes them up because they've been dry.
And then you're putting them outside when you come home in April.
Right. I usually keep them in the greenhouse until I know the frost is finished. You don't want to put them out where it's going to frost on them. And then I put them out. Hang them out. That's it. I don't do much with them. It's better up north. Our daughter's mother-in-law always takes hers into Bell's Nursery and has them depot them and repot them, and they put new soil in, wash the roots off, and take care of things like that. I'm too lazy to take them out, but once in a while I will set them all out on the boardwalk and dump them and shake everything off and hose the roots good and cut them way back. I did have one that I kept for probably 20 years.
Wow.
And it had a trunk on it that was that big, and it had bark on the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And it bloomed every year. It was just huge, but it's so heavy to carry in and out. And I started not taking care of it, and so I lost it. But it was bonsai'd, and I'd trimmed it so that it had shape to it, and it was absolutely gorgeous.
So you were saying it actually got a stem that was almost tree-like.
Oh, it was a tree.
Yeah.
It was a bonsai tree. Uh-huh. It was a fuchsia tree. But it was just a fuchsia plant that I got in town. But I'd had it long enough. It was that big around, and it had real bark on that trunk. And it only stood about that high.
So she's saying it was about 6 inches around and maybe a foot and a half to 2 feet high.
Yeah.
Sometimes on the radio, it's hard to see.
Yeah. Vocal. But it was gorgeous. And every year, the flowers were huge. Mm-hmm.
So we were walking around in New Zealand and on a trail in the woods, and we see all these fuchsia blooms. And it's like, we look around, we can't see a fuchsia bush anywhere. And then finally we look up, and 60 feet above us is this huge tree that's a fuchsia tree. We just think of them as basket plants and little annuals, but they're actually a huge tree.
They're beautiful.
Yeah.
In Juneau, didn't they have the trees where they had taken the trees out and turned them upside down,
yeah,
and then they hung fuchsias in them? That was quite an attraction.
It was quite an attraction. And there is a greenhouse in Juneau, I'm not sure the name, but they overwinter your fuchsias for you there,
right,
too.
Right, they can do that. Uh-huh. But I just put them in the root cellar.
Right.
I've been doing it forever.
But you don't cut them back, and that's what I think the people that we talked to before were cutting them back.
Well, or not stripping the leaves off.
Just strip the leaves because they make such a mess if you don't.
Well, I was thinking it stops the plant, you know, too.
It tells
it's done.
I just tear off everything.
So another really attractive feature there, Dick, was, and I'm kind of curious how you did this, you have a pond in your yard.
Yeah, it started out as a little duck pond. And the ducks kept getting it bigger and bigger and bigger, and so finally we decided to make a fish pond out of it.
We cemented it so they couldn't make it any bigger.
So that's what you had to do, was cement it so that it'll hold water.
Yes.
And it still leaks.
Uh-huh, right.
But I have a hose hooked up to the frost-free faucet up in the chicken house,
uh-huh,
and then it's underground, and then it goes right into the one end, and we made it so that he put cement so it made a little waterfall, and you can hear the water run. That's what I wanted to hear, was the water run. So it runs in there all the time.
So then do you use that water out of the pond to feed your plants or anything?
Mm-mm. No, it just goes back into the narrows.
It runs down and out and down by the back door, and then it goes buried all the way across and then into another little water thing that's down there, just a pond where it sits, and then it goes out onto the beach.
Oh, okay, yeah. So and you have a trout in there, huh?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. A trout and a toad.
Yep. I saw the toad again this morning when I was picking strawberries.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's nice. He's big.
Uh-huh.
He's a good-sized toad.
So another thing that you notice right away is all the fruit trees. And I'll just mention a few of them that were real prominent. The Tartarian cherry trees, Lapin cherry trees with... and blue elderberries, apricot tree with apricots that are starting to ripen, nectarine tree, vine maple that is, you know, about 15 feet tall. I'm used to them being, you know, just kind of a big bush. But that's really growing large. And, Dick, you were showing me the trees and the apple trees that you graft them.
Right. Because of the climate that we have here, I've tried to get a graft started on a crabapple, which is endemic to the area. And that, so I grafted, this has been about 20 years ago, I grafted a summer apple on to a crabapple. And it is now probably 10 inches in diameter. And produces, we probably get between 10 and 15 gallons of apples off of it.
Yeah, lots of apples.
So it's been successful.
They're not like the kind you buy in the store because they're not quite as juicy. But they do have a nice, zesty flavor. And they can be beautiful.
Oh, so you can them? You make sauce out of them or something?
I just make pie.
Oh, okay.
I just cut them in half, take the little core out, and stick them in balls. And they're kind of a pink blush.
Oh.
They're beautiful. Mm-hmm. You just leave the skin on.
So I was curious on the apricot tree. You don't have to have to cross-pollinate?
I don't think that one does.
No, you don't.
You don't, yeah. They're not like the apples. The apples usually want a cross-pollinator. But our local crab apple trees will usually pollinate with most of the apple varieties that are up here.
And if they bloom at the same time.
Yeah.
And if you have bees. And you guys do have a beehive.
Yeah, we do have a beehive.
And
it's usually raining, though, so they all stay in.
There's lots of insects.
Yeah. Yeah. We let our kale go to seed and so that we have flowers in the spring for the bees and the pollinators.
And they love that.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
They love kale.
They do. Somebody has to.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. We eat a lot of kale. Mm-hmm. Lots of kale.
And, Dick, the cherry trees that had the four different grafts, is that something that you did or that you brought up?
No, I bought it. I got it. Already grafted.
Huh.
I do a winter garden in my greenhouse, and I put up another plastic greenhouse inside the greenhouse.
Right.
And then I have chard and kale and radicchio. And what else do we put in there? I transplant from the garden small plants that are just come up that year so that they'll winter through. And we have greens through the winter then if we're here.
Uh-huh.
And when we come home, it'll be growing when we come home.
That's the trick, is to have it there ready for you when you get home.
That's right.
Yeah, really nice.
And so we have enough daylight for you don't have to supplement the light at all.
No heat and no light.
Uh-huh. Just a double.
To keep the heat from the ground.
Uh-huh.
Because there is heat in that ground.
Yeah, definitely. All of us with heat pumps know that.
Yes.
So on the tour, we were apprised of the his and her greenhouses, and seems like a good compromise and something maybe I'll look into. But
there you go.
Yeah, in Dick's greenhouse there was is the one with the squash,
mm-hmm.
and the zucchinis and cucumbers and the real big tomatoes, and you want to talk about. You also have pumpkins in there, Dick.
I have grown pumpkins in the past, but we really don't utilize those much. So,
the big squash I saw, that's a hard squash.
Yes, it's a hard squash.
Okay.
It's a winter squash.
Oh.
And I've tried different varieties, and I've found a couple that work quite well, and they will keep for the winter. So it serves us well.
But you haven't picked any tomatoes yet.
No. I would have to pick green ones if I did.
You know, there's nothing wrong with fried green tomatoes.
Oh, I know.
Oh, and they're very good.
My mother used to make apple pie from green tomatoes.
I've heard that, but I've never tried it. I've always had too many apples.
Yeah, well, we grew up where there weren't any apples. So
yeah.
She would say, this tastes like an apple pie. And I'd be like, oh, okay.
They always made them with Ritz crackers, too.
Yeah. No, my mother didn't, but.
I appreciated the song at the first of the show because that's Pat Smith's song.
Uh-huh.
You know, Annabelle was in here all the time, and that's all I ever heard. So Pat had to have ripe, homegrown tomatoes.
Right. Yeah.
So even with all the gardening you've done, you've had the same experience with everybody else here in Petersburg this year in that carrots are a challenge. And usually, you know, you're kind of sneaking the baby carrots out of the ground right now and chowing on them, which I think are the best. And but this year, if you do have carrots, you're really lucky, and most people had just failures, but some of your carrots look good.
Yeah, that was planted three times.
Three times, wow. And that's not the norm.
No, Usually it's once.
And you grow all your carrots outside.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We put celery in the greenhouse this year.
Uh-huh.
Polly Parr used to grow beautiful celery. And so we wanted to try it, but I don't like peppery celery. So we're trying to see if we can get some that's sweet. I don't know. We haven't found out yet this year.
Yeah, I had always been kind of under the impression that celery didn't do well here. But
hers was gorgeous.
You have celery, and then yesterday we went to Mike and Courtney Truex's, and they had celery. So uh-huh. I guess it does grow here.
Did she say anything about getting it so that it's sweet?
I didn't ask her.
We got to go out there and see their operation.
And they have asparagus also, and you guys are having asparagus. And theirs is 5 years old, and they just started picking it a little bit this year. So I know that for me to wait 5 years and think that I have to wait, and then it's like, well, it might die before that, so I better eat it now. And then it does die because you're not letting it mature.
Asparagus just doesn't like to be touched.
Oh,
it doesn't like to be weeded, and I couldn't leave it alone. And we killed our first attempt because I just weeded it too much.
Oh, okay.
But he has it in bins now where he takes care of it, and I don't go down there and weed in it.
Uh-huh. That's why you have his and her greenhouses,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. Sort of.
Yeah, asparagus. I know everybody's trying new things, and it's great because we learn new things and we increase our intake of different kinds of vegetables. Move on from potatoes and cabbage and kale and try something else.
Well, I can attest to the broccoli that there were beautiful heads of broccoli, and Sharon cut one and gave it to us, and we chowed down on it.
Wasn't that good?
It was really good.
Makes you believe in broccoli again.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, man, that spoils you for going up to Hammers and trying to pick through the broccoli to get
one. That's the bad thing to say.
Yeah. But
it is true, but that's truly organic broccoli, too.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
There's nothing on there that's going to hurt you at all.
Hmm. Big heads. I mean, I was really impressed. And so you walk into Sharon's greenhouse, and you just pervaded the air with dill and alyssum. And it was really nice. It was just like stick your head in. And she has the three-season raspberries in her greenhouse. And what else?
I have Somerset grapes.
Oh, that's the grapes.
This year I don't have very many. I think I was just too busy and overwhelmed when I came home this year. I didn't go out and pollinate quite as much. And I haven't pruned them. I'm just not very smart with grapes. But they make wonderful juice when we have a lot. Last year we had pans and pans full of grapes.
So how old is that grape?
The one on the one side is probably 6 or 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is 3 years old.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but they're the same kind.
They're the same kind.
Yeah,
okay.
Somersets. They're the same.
And do you have to cross-pollinate?
Nope.
No. They.
Huh. I only had one plant, the one big one. And it just did its own thing. And then I put in some more. We happened to run into some when we were down shopping in down south. And so I brought some more home and just put them in.
Uh-huh.
And so now they're all the way across the north side.
So they have a large kiwi growing up on a trellis, and like most people here, they've got a kiwi. They don't really have a male and a female, and it therefore doesn't produce. But
it just looks pretty.
Yeah, they look very pretty, and we're real hopeful that the one that we have ever looks like that nice.
Is yours an Arctic?
We got ours from Ed Bajarski, so I would assume it's good for here.
Yeah.
And we bought a male and a female, but we only have one. The others didn't live.
Yeah.
So hopefully, I was hoping maybe that Tana would have the other male or female, depending on what we have, and that they were close enough to cross-pollinate, but I'm not sure.
I don't think she has a kiwi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think she has a kiwi. She has a honeyberry.
She has a lot, yeah. I thought maybe she had one growing up on the house, but
no,
I'm not sure.
No, she doesn't. Uh-huh. That's a trumpet vine and clematis.
Yeah. So your clematis, are they the, like...
I have Jack Manny eyes. Uh-huh. She's got a beautiful clematis. I still want to get a start of it. It's different than my others are. I need to get, when I planted a trumpet vine yesterday that she started for me, and I had to put it behind a fence, and I put a piece of wire on a tree so that it could climb up the tree. I've got too much stuff next to the house. I have a complainer when I get too many things next to the house.
And somebody has to trim around all the things with the grass.
I do that. I use the weeder. But he does once in a while. I don't like that because he goes where he's not supposed to go sometimes.
Yeah. So we're just about ready to wrap it up here for In the Garden this time, and we're really thankful for Dick and Sharon to come over, and I'm most thankful for them sharing their produce with us. That was really a delight, eating raspberries and the broccoli and that.
And fresh pesto that we had last
night.
You had basil.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had basil, mm-hmm. and Deb made fresh pesto, and I had it on fresh halibut. And,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's why we live here in Southeast Alaska.
That's exactly right. So grow, grow, grow.
Yeah, yeah. And share, share, share.
And just to have even more fun, Dick and Sharon also have a garden on cake. So... Deb and I will be heading, hopefully, to Cake through Rocky Pass tomorrow. And we taped a show with Mike Truax yesterday. And hopefully, if I can have them transferred from my phone to the radio here, we'll be hearing that next week. And thanks so much for listening, and tune in again next week.
Program comes from Petersburg Flower Farm with bouquets and subscriptions coming soon. Open 10 to 5, Friday through Monday at 6 Rory's Road. Closed Tuesday through Thursday. More information at 907-518-4363 or Petersburg Flower Farm on Facebook.